Welcome to the Atlantic Group Podcast. Our seven tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your contribution covers the expenses of our group, this podcast, and also that of our AA service structure. If you are an AA member who finds this podcast helpful, you can contribute using Venmo at AG Tradition 7, the at sign, and then AG Tradition, the number 7, all one word. Or you can use Zelle under agnycinfo at gmail.com. In the note, what's it for, please write AG Podcast. Thank you for your support.
Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrations. Our main speaker tonight is Chris.
Wow. Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks. That's the truth. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm super nervous. I was doing okay, I think, until about 6 o'clock. Is that better? And I was walking down Park Avenue, and I started to qualify. Like, on my way here. And I can feel my heart now. So yeah, I started to qualify, and I started making you laugh. And the truth is that for me today, like, I see that as my alcoholism. So being asked to speak at a meeting, while it's an honor and a privilege, and I really mean that, like, that's one of those things that, you know, if you hang out in AA, you hear speakers say, it's like good AA manners to say, it's an honor and a privilege to speak at this meeting, and it's sort of one of those throwaway things, but, or maybe it's not, I don't mean to say that, but it's just sort of something that a lot of people say, and that's true. Like, I am super grateful, Adam, that you asked me to do this, and what I mean when I say it's an honor is that, like, I know a lot of people who have died from alcoholism and who have died from addiction, all manner of addiction, and who have tried this and not gotten it, and you know, I can tell you, I can kind of do the math for you and tell you what I've done, and maybe there's some sense in it, but to me there's a lot of mystery in who gets this and why I got it, and so it really is an honor, you know, and I know one of the things that, and particularly at this meeting, like, it's not, this isn't my home group, it's a meeting, but it's a meeting that I feel connected to. My second sponsor, I got sober in Connecticut, and my second sponsor, who was a guy that sponsored me from, I don't know, the time I had like 2 years sober until 6 or 7 years sober, was someone that came to this group and was sponsored by Ava at this group. And so I didn't really know what sponsorship meant when I asked him to be my sponsor. And he knew what it meant to be a sponsor, you know? And so, like, we started doing the thing. And I know now that he was kind of going through the work at the same time with Ava, so I was just sort of downstream from this message. And so I guess what I want to say about being asked to speak here is that I know that there's a lot of thought, I guess, put into, you know, ensuring that a message of depth and weight is carried here, both at the podium and through the service that you do and the way you sponsor people. And so I have benefited greatly from all those things for years. I know also one of the things I've seen people do when they speak here is tell you their home group and their sponsor and the whole deal. So my home group is the Greenwich Village Group, which is on Hudson and Grove in the West Village, and it meets Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday night at 7:15. And I got sober on February 11th, 2002. I have a sponsor, her name is Ava, and I have a bunch of sponsees, and I'm in, you know, I'm still looking for new ways to treat my disease with all the steps, really. And so the thing I was saying before about like being asked to speak at a meeting, and you know, I still have alcoholism. So to me, when I say that, what that means is like, I still just want to be loved. Like, I still want to be liked. I want to be approved. I want the head nodding. I want the laughter. And I want that like on the train. I want it in Starbucks. I want it at a meeting. I want it like, I just want that thing following me around, that level of approval. And I didn't know that that's what I had when I got here. Like, I knew I kept waking up in jail. And I knew like I was drinking lemonade and rubbing alcohol. So that was a problem. That was clear. Like, it was clear that I had a problem with my relationship to alcohol. There was no, I was 23 years old, and I didn't have any question about that piece of my disease. I had some resistance to accepting it, but it was clear. There was no getting around the fact that I was physically dependent on alcohol, not to discount that or belittle that or something, but like, I'm almost 17 years sober, and so like, when I'm walking down the street thinking about the future on my way to a meeting and thinking about like, what's really driving me is, do I want to come here and be approved of, or do I want to actually be helpful? Do I want to say something to someone in this room that is here maybe because they think they have a problem with alcohol and think that this might be a way to get at that problem, and they're just trying to check this out and see maybe if this is a possible solution? So if that's you, welcome. Or if you're here and you know you have a drinking problem, and think maybe this is a way to do it, or you've tried everything else and nothing else has worked, and this is like the last stop for you before you really do some damage, I guess I want to say welcome, and I totally identify. I mean, like I said, I got here knowing that I had a serious alcohol problem, but I also thought, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work for me. Not only is it not going to work for me, but I don't believe you. And I don't believe you when you talk about God. I don't believe you when you talk about anything. I mean, I didn't understand the language. I didn't understand what resentment had to do with the fact that I kept getting DWIs. I didn't understand what anything you were talking about. And I couldn't quite sit still long enough or keep my kind of mind quiet enough to really listen to anything you were saying. But there was also a part of me that knew I needed to be here. So when I'm walking down the street now and my disease comes up and I can name it, I can say like, oh, here's that defect, that warped instinct for approval, which can just still run my life. I can still be not able to walk down the street because I'm so driven by a desire to just be approved of, whether it's in a meeting or my little tribe. I mean, we're wired for that, but we're wired to be, you know, have some level of security and have an ability to express ourselves sexually and have a social life. But for me, what I've learned in AA is that all those instincts are just warped. They're still warped for me. And so when it comes up in this day and I can name it as my disease, that's a miracle for me. Like, I can see it coming up. Here's what I can do, and I can go. For me, what I do is I immediately launch into some prayer, and there's lots of different ones that I use, but one that I use in an experience like this is, God, I see that I'm about to be captured by my alcoholism, and I don't want to go down this road, and can I just be with you right now in this moment, and just help me see this in a different way maybe, and it just breaks it up for me. And it's a small application of a principle, and I go to it, and I use it, and it's a tool. And I used to have that. I remember being in all sorts of situations. I mean, I grew up in New York City. I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like. I find that thing of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now really tricky to stick to. because I see and feel my story differently all the time, and I'm really grateful for that, you know. I remember having, so I grew up here in New York. I was born into a kind of a, you know, a family built like an avalanche. My father was like out of the picture when I was a baby, and my mom got sober when I was 9. So the first 9 years of my life, she wasn't sober, and there was lots of insanity, and so I was off to the races pretty young. And what that meant was like, it was like the, you know, late 80s, early 90s in New York City. And I was like in bars and nightclubs really, really young. And my adolescence was not about the SATs or college applications. It was about like guest lists and drink tickets and parties and people who had parents that were out of town and they had a free house and access to alcohol and sometimes sleeping in Sheep's Meadow. And, you know, that's what it looked like, really. And I remember often I would have some experience, I would be in some situation where I would think, thanks, something is wrong with what you're doing. Something is wrong with who you are with. Something is wrong with where you are. You know, I'd be in some dangerous situation with people or, I now see that as like that, some of those same instincts, like a survival instinct. You know, there was something in me that wanted to live, some very basic human thing that was like, maybe you shouldn't do whatever you're about to do. And it was always very quickly followed by, oh, it doesn't matter. It's the East Village. You're a kid. You'll get over it. This is kind of rock and roll. It's a little sexy. It'll make a good story. So, you know, that kind of diseased thinking. And that was my disease, you know, that thinking. And I still have that, is what I want to say. I still have access to that. If I'm not in a process of trying to be in the application of these principles, that same thinking, those same thoughts can creep in and start telling me stories about my life and about you and about my future and my family. And the woman in front of me who hasn't pulled out her ATM card yet, and my boss, and the people in the meeting, and the client, you know, and I can just run and run and be a tornado, roaring my way through the lives of others, stone cold sober. And it's been my experience. Where was I? I was sleeping in Sheep's Meadow. I was 15. I was, you know, my drinking story is, I once heard a woman at a meeting downtown called High Noon, and she said, she got up at the podium and she said, you know, I picked up a drink when I was 15 and then there was drama, 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 and then I got sober. And that's sort of my story. Like, I gave you a little bit of an indication. I mean, if there's lemonade and rubbing alcohol in your story, you're probably in the right place, I want to say. That just gives you a little bit of an inkling of where I came from. So how I got here, what happened was I was 23, as I said. I was on my third DWI. I was living in Connecticut. I was riding horses. I was living on a horse farm and kind of riding and training and doing this whole thing that was really the only thing I had ever wanted to do ever in my life. And I didn't grow up with a lot of money, but I was given these opportunities and I rode pretty well. So there was sort of some doors that opened for me and I wound up with this incredible opportunity. And I just hated it. I was just I hear myself tell this story about like being on a horse in Connecticut and being filled with resentment, and it sounds like, who is this person? But I remember at the end just thinking like, I'm too young for this, and I'm supposed to be in New York, and these horses are trash, and these people don't understand, and you know, if I had a really nice horse, I'd be on the Olympic team, blah, 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 like this whole thing, the world had gotten pretty small, and I was drinking around the clock. I was taking I remember coming into the barn early one morning. The vet would come in the morning, and he said to me one morning, you know, if you put a little Banamine in your coffee, that'll like nip that thing in the bud. He was talking about a hangover. I couldn't believe he could tell I was hungover, but he could tell. And Banamine is like a muscle relaxer for horses, and I just like didn't skip a beat, man. I went into the office and I was like, oh, that sounds like a really good idea. He's a doctor, right? And And I put some Banamine in that coffee, and suddenly I had a hangover cure, you know? And it was just that, like, the thinking was, I don't know if there was a lot of deliberation for you around what you were ingesting, but that sort of, that was my thinking. I mean, I just didn't pass go. I thought, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, smoking cigarettes was how I dealt with my hunger, and drinking coffee with Banamine in it was how I dealt with my hangovers, or being tired. And at some point during these three DWIs that I had gotten, I got a little meeting book. In Connecticut, the meeting book is just like this little pamphlet, and it was in my glove compartment, and it used to like speak to me, that thing. And for whatever reason, this Monday morning, Monday afternoon, actually, I walked into the barn, and it was after a weekend that was not unlike many other weekends I had had, meaning there was long periods that I don't really remember. I was at that time having to, you know, I was coming down to New York on the weekends because I couldn't be bothered with showing up for anything in Connecticut. I was living in this little apartment on the side of the road on, you know, in I was just, it was like the lights had been turned off, the electricity hadn't been paid, the rent was unpaid, the car was unregistered, uninsured. The license was suspended for the third time. I was going back and forth to court because of these DWIs. I was looking at some pretty, I mean, I was looking at jail time. I was getting these packages from the IRS that I wasn't opening. The electricity had been turned off, so whatever was in the refrigerator, the last time the electricity had been turned on was sort of, there was this sort of like ecosystem of like moss and I don't know what was happening in there. There was no furniture in the living room. There was a yoga mat. I've never ever done yoga. There's like a yoga mat in the living room and a box spring in the, you know, and I just thought like, you know, life in the circus. And I walked into the barn that Monday morning, and the woman that I looked for, that I worked for, looked at me like, I just will never forget the look on her face. And she, it was some combination of sadness and fear and anger and here we go again. And I had a thought like, oh, I have that meeting book in my car. Now this is a thought that I had had before. Like I knew that that thing was there. It was like, and for whatever reason, the next thought was like, oh, I should go look at it and see if there's an AA meeting tonight. And I did that, and then I went to that AA meeting. And, you know, again, might not sound like a big deal to you, but that was a huge thing that I did. And I walked into that meeting. It was at the Hartford Gay and Lesbian Community Center. It was like six of the kind of, these kind of like, I mean, the truth is that I walked in there and I thought they took one look at me and thought like, well, finally, you know what I mean? Some like this kind of groovy New York guy is here. And the truth is like, I sat down and someone came up to me at the break and I didn't open my mouth during that meeting. And he said to me, do you think we should go to the hospital? And I just started to cry. And, I didn't know what he meant. I didn't know why he thought I should go to a hospital. It was a really scary thing, and I think he said it with there was a lot of love in what he was offering to me in that moment, and he then became a very close friend, but I don't really remember anything else about that first meeting. I heard whatever you hear at your first meeting. I mean, I don't know what that was. My mind was pretty cloudy, and it was pretty noisy in here, and you spoke a language that I didn't understand. And, you know, we didn't go to the hospital. We went to a diner. And I had a cheeseburger and milkshake, and I had that combination of, like, I can't believe this is how this turned out. I can't believe I'm with this motley crew of, you know, kind of loser lesbians from West Hartford and whatever. And then also, like, thank God I'm here. You know, there wasn't a feeling of coming home. I didn't have that. I mean, I've heard that's another one in AA, and it wasn't my experience. But there was a real knowing that I needed to be here, and a sense of relief, and a sense of, you know, the war is over, that kind of thing. And so So that was February of 2002. I got a sponsor on my 90th day. I'll tell you why I got him, because I was at a car wash. I was we didn't count days out loud in Connecticut, and but I knew that during that time I came down to the city a couple of times and I heard people counting days, and I knew that that was a thing that people did. They kind of kept track of how many days they weren't drinking, and that 90 was a big deal. And right on or around my 90th day, I remember going to a car wash. It was in the spring, and I got like one of those packets of which is essentially a cloth that's drenched in alcohol to clean out the interior of the car. And I'm just kind of minding my business, and it's a beautiful spring day, and I've treated my alcoholism and I'm sober now, and I'm telling everybody in my life. I remember very early being on the highway calling this girl that I'd lived with in college, my first attempt at going to college, and just going on and on and on about my sobriety and AA and this thing that I'm doing. And, you know, she, you know, some of you might know this, but like the ninth step gets a lot of press. Like people outside of AA know that like you're going to say sorry eventually. Thanks. If you get sober, there's an apology coming, right? So I'm like going on and on and on and on and on about me. And she said to me totally earnestly, you know, if you're calling to apologize, I forgive you. It's okay. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not there yet. And I just kind of like kept going and just me. And it's true. I'm grateful we can laugh about that. But that's just who I was. I mean, it was just all about me. And the sense that I had done anything wrong or had anything to clean up just completely eluded me, and can still elude me if I don't keep this thing under review by people that are treating their alcoholism. You know, I can still be that guy, my arms flailing through the air, talking about myself sober. But anyway, so I'm at this car wash and I get this packet to wipe out the interior, and the vapor from that thing just got into my kind of olfactory system somehow. And I told you there's like lemonade and rubbing alcohol in my story, and just that experience was so scary to me and the phenomenon, and I just kind of like, it clicked into place, and I called this guy that had given me my number. He's a guy that walked up to me at the end of a meeting once and said, I'm really glad you're here. We need you here. And I knew, it was a very tender thing that he said to me, and it touched me in a very kind of tender, non-ego-driven way. I kind of knew what he was saying to me, and the way he was trying to connect with me. It felt very generous, and I called him and asked him to be my sponsor. And I have very little time left, and I have 17 years to talk about. I will say that I'm on the long, slow path. You know, I'm on the long, slow recovery path. That's something we hear here, and I don't say that. I don't say that to kind of in a kind of self-effacing way, throwing myself away. I'm a knucklehead. I don't get it. I've kind of resigned myself to this is a process that occurs slowly over time, and for whatever reason, I have continued to. I'll tell you about 2 years ago, my life kind of fell apart, and it was around the end of a relationship. Which is an understatement. I found myself with kind of nowhere to live and no real prospects professionally. And the whole thing had really, really come undone, and I just was on fire. And a very good friend of mine died shortly after that. And it was kind of like I didn't know whether to go left or right, you know? And I'd been coming to meetings long enough, but my sponsor had died a few years prior. I didn't get another sponsor. So I'm like 2 years without a sponsor. I'm in a relationship. I'm living in a lot of self-will, a lot of dishonesty, a lot of compartmentalization, and doing a lot of damage. And Ava came back into my life, and I remember I called her one morning. It was shortly after July 4th, and I just was on fire, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, I literally was like beaten into a state of reasonableness. And I kind of talked her through top line what was going on, and she sent me an inventory and said, do this writing and then come over. And that's what I did. I did the writing, I followed the instruction, I went to her apartment, I sat, I read it, we cried together. It was just an emotional thing. And she said to me, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with any of this. I don't know what's going to happen with the relationship or the job or the apartment or the, any of it. I don't know where any of it's going. But I promise you that if you do this work, you will be able to help someone else. And that is where you're going to find relief from all of this. And I just heard it, and I followed the instructions, and I have continued to follow the instructions to the best of my ability for the past couple of years. And I am, I have entire stretches of time where I feel like my alcoholism is treated, where I can be on the train and it's really hot and we stop and I can just kind of stay quiet. And I don't get into that kind of alpha crazy energized thing that I can get into. There's not a tightening. It can just kind of stay quiet, and that can go on for weeks for me now, like a real sense of quiet and peace and serenity. And that's a promise, you know. That's my experience. And I don't know if that sounds if that holds any appeal to you. I mean, when I got here, and if you had said to, you know, if you had said to me at some point, someone's going to say, hey, Chris, do you want to put on a suit and go stand on Park Avenue in front of 500 strangers and talk about your alcoholism? Like, I would have thought, are you crazy? I mean, that holds no appeal to me at all. Like, so if saying that you can have some quiet, I mean, if that doesn't make any sense to you, as a prospect, or if that's not attractive in some way, I'll just say keep coming back. It's what I've been given. I continue to get so much, and I know it's your anniversary meeting. And thanks again for asking me to speak, and I look forward to hearing from you.